show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. It seems that the Florida Panthers are enjoying being two-time Stanley Cup champions. They continue to celebrate. And if you're going to celebrate somewhere, it seems like South Beach is the place to do it. I don't see them in Sunrise. They're not parading it around Sawgrass Mills, the shopping mall that's right next to the arena. Have you ever been, Brent? You've never been to a Panthers home game, have you?
No, can't say I've checked that one off. I was about to call it a bucket list, but I'd be ready for the bucket if I'd got to that part of it. So no, haven't been there. No.
Yeah, it's not in South Beach. Like it's close enough, but yeah, it's in like a suburb, a sleepy suburb. I missed when it was called the car rental center. That was very appropriate.
It did feel very fitting. I will also say that it's like the Hurricanes would have been a tough break for them to not only lose to the Panthers, but then have them steal their tradition of having the parade just in a parking lot outside of their arena. So I guess they didn't want to. Brad Marchand wants to, maybe, but they didn't want to rub salt too much in that wound. Or that, like, why even have a parade at this point? It's been I don't begrudge them. Like, the Caps did the same thing. Great. Like, honestly, it's you win your cup, you go celebrate however long you want to. But, like, how will they know it's the parade?
I know.
How would it be any different?
They've been everywhere. They've been, on every mode of transportation.
Sam Reinhart was climbing something in a nightclub last night, trying to, like, yank down a Sasha Barkov jersey that was being hoisted to the rafters of said establishment. Like, yeah, it's a scene. Yeah.
Sure. So a couple of things coming out of that. One, Sam Bennett did the thing that, I think has become vogue to do, and I think Max Domi did it on Instagram too when he signed his spectacular extension that has led to many championships. The Leo meme from Wolf of Wall Street that he's not bleeping leaving. I don't know if that indicates it. Like, is that it? Is that binding? Like, does that put his agent in a box now that he said he's not leaving, Brent?
I mean, I see the point you're making. No, nothing's binding here. Also, it's like those people, go ask them if they remember what shirt they were wearing that night, let alone the particulars of the verbal contract that Sam Bennett made with them. So, yeah, it's like, do I think it's binding? Yeah, I do. Like, I think he's going to be back. But no, I think those people could easily forget that happened because they don't remember anything based on the state of affairs.
No, they didn't. It seemed like a little bit more of a casual affair when Brad Marchand was going through seemingly every player on the roster and taking a picture of them or doing a little video capture for his Instagram story and then saying thank you to the team that either traded the player away or put him on waivers, and the Panthers were able to gobble them up. And there are some great examples of that on this Panthers team. But he also included, like, Matthew Tkachuk, who, for people with very short memories, he said he wasn't going to re-sign in Calgary and that you should probably trade me if you want to get anything for me. And coming off the Johnny Gaudreau situation, in which he departed for nothing, I think smartly, now you can talk about the return, but at the time we thought it was good. Brad Treliving said, okay, where do you want to go? And what kind of return can we get? Is it something? Okay, we'll do that. And then he also included Paul Maurice, who quit. Like, he quit. He's like, thank you, Winnipeg Jets, for Paul Maurice. Paul Maurice quit. Like, I mean, he was on the verge of being fired, but he's like, these guys just aren't listening. And boy, I know we've done some conspiracy talk today, but at the time, you had to know that there was, like, at least a percentage of his brain who was like, boy, you know, the Joel Quenneville situation in Florida, and man, if I could just be on the radar there, that seems like a pretty good situation. And lo and behold, he ends up winning a couple of Stanley Cups in his first two and being the first head coach or manager in North American pro sports to go like 20 years without winning a championship and then winning two. Yeah, I don't think those are the same as like the end of the roster dudes who have become essential to a couple of championships. I don't think Matthew Tkachuk and Paul Maurice qualify.
No, little different. You should thank whoever enacted the state tax policies in Florida first. I don't know if that was DeSantis or if that predated his time. But yeah, that's who you should be thanking for Tkachuk specifically. And then Maurice, you just thank Paul Maurice. But you can do that because he helped you. So, yeah.
Yeah. No, thanks. Flames for just giving up on Matthew Tkachuk. Yeah, no, that's exactly the way it went down. Anyways, all right. It's been too long since we've talked to our next guest, but there's a good reason for that. He's been overseas swinging the wrenches. Damian Cox, our Leafs historian. How was your trip?
My trip was great. I thought you were going to say there's a good reason for that. He's under suspension, and now his suspension is over, and he's going to come back suitably contrite and agree with everything he's told to agree with. And no, that's not true. You know, it was a great golf in Northern Ireland for a week with some great people from a bunch of different countries, and it was a cool event to be part of. And I did miss the... And I apologize because I meant to be back for it, but I understand, Ben, you won the long driving championship while I was away playing in some event. And so, you know, while my golf was fun, I wish I'd been there for you. I would love, I'm hoping to get video of it. I haven't seen it yet, but I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, there is no such video. Yeah, I was able to pump it past Jeremy Roenick, 50-some-year-old Jeremy Roenick. And that impressed him. But then there was like the other parts of my game, which
the other parts. There's the other parts.
That's like
I know. I want golf to be the game as when I hit it 270, they should say, "Okay, pick up. That's a birdie. Oh, let's go to the next hole." Like you should be. You hit such a good drive. You're excused from the rest of the hole. Wouldn't that be an interesting way to play?
Hold on. I just want to get in here on that. Does that work like in other ways? Like if I clip a nice wedge, does that count for the same thing? Drive?
By then you're so close, right? Yeah. It's, anyway.
You know what your reward is? A good score on the hole. Right? Like, that's your reward. My drive is like one. It's like a great start. It's one of my 7-step program to get the ball in the hole. So, like, yeah.
I would tell you hitting it long and low and straight is kind of needed in Northern Ireland. I've never been in a place where weather changes so fast or played in wind like that, like, every single day. But it's a great place, great people, really interesting. Visited Belfast. I highly recommend Northern Ireland to any golfers and non-golfers alike.
I would love to go. I will say there's and wind and like sideways rain, that's part of it. It's almost like you kind of want that if you're going to get the full.
No.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you.
I'll take sunny and still, thank you.
That's not Irish golf, though. Like,
oh, it's fine by me.
Yeah.
Hey, those courses are hard enough. Those courses with the fescue and the way they're set up and I will tell you, it does make, when you do get a good day, you're very appreciative out there. You're very appreciative.
That's good. I've always had the exact same thought because like I would love to go, and I agree with Ben. I think if you went over there and like you didn't get one, you'd be like, I feel like you got to do one. But yeah, I would much prefer 23 sunny and just the wind blowing in whatever direction I need it to be on that particular hole. I won't take no wind. I'll just take a little help.
A little breeze.
Yeah, was there? I do want to talk hockey with you, but you've baited me with this golf trip. Was there one course that sticks out? Was it all just a blur? Like I'd imagine there'd be one kind of crown jewel, and even if it's not the nicest, whatever reason, it just kind of stuck out. Or
so I was playing in an event where you rotate among a few courses, and Portrush is usually one of the courses, but it wasn't this year because they were playing some little event there. Yeah. Or they're playing, they're a little busy. And by the way, you drive by there and see the setup 6 weeks before the British Open. It's unbelievable. I mean, I've seen a lot of major international events, Olympics and stuff. Wow. I mean, what they truck in to do that event. So we didn't play Portrush, but the Port Stewart Strand course is amazing. Castle Rock is amazing. And Ballyliffin, those are the three courses that I would take away and say, wow. I think, and beyond that, there's just sort of an attitude, and Lynx Golf has just a different feel to the whole thing, you know. You're grateful to find your ball. You're putting from 40 yards out. It's just a whole different thing. You know, and you see a guy in the morning and he'll say, "Are you going golfing?" And you say, "Yeah." And he goes, "Looks like it might be a bit windy today. I'd be careful." And then, and it's windy, let me tell you, every day. So It was a lot of fun. Went with some great guys, and it was good. Brad Fay was one of them. And Brad Fay, before we went, had never, I don't think ever, had a pint of Guinness. And by the end, he was sucking those things back like a kid with Kool-Aid.
He's a bit of a stick, too, isn't he?
He's a good player. Yep. Brad's a good player. But we got into some competition, some alternate shots, some match play. And Brad, despite, like, his I don't know if you guys know, but his mother-in-law's in the Canadian Golf Hall of Fame. She's a great player.
I did not know that.
And he comes from a real golfing family. But he's not played a ton of competitive golf. Well, we played some competitive golf against some good players, and I think he went away saying, this is fun, but this is hard.
Yeah. Well, it sounds like an amazing trip, and I'm glad you had a good time. I'm waiting for I guess if you're not playing your own ball, the scores won't show up on the Golf Canada app, but like...
They're there.
They? Okay, I didn't see it. Okay,
there.
Maybe I didn't do my investigating. I'll check it out. Way to go. Great trip by you. While you were gone...
That's it. Can I go now? Oh, there's stuff happened.
Yeah.
I missed, the first five games of the Stanley Cup Final. One interesting thing, guys. Mm-hmm. Hard to get over there. I was in Northern Ireland, England, and Scotland, and it was not like turn on the TV and there's the Stanley Cup Final.
No, I thought they grew the game. I thought the game was growing by Bettman. What's going on here?
Yeah.
I was told
yeah.
it was growing internationally.
Yeah, that's why. Did you see the numbers out of Florida? The TV numbers?
No.
Teeny tiny.
Really?
That's right. Like the whole grow the game thing that I've been listening to for 30 years or whatever. Gary Bettman growing the game. I mean, they can't even grow the game in the places where they have the Stanley Cup champions, you know? Mm. So, I was surprised. I thought it would be more accessible than it was, but neither was the U.S. Open. So I think one of the great things about going overseas is you start to see, they're interested in other stuff. You know, they don't hang on every word Donald Trump says. They don't care about the Stanley Cup Final or the NBA Final or, you know, stuff that's happening in North America the way we do.
Yeah, football and rugby, I imagine, are king over there. But it's surprising.
Yep.
Having the Belfast Giants and, you know, Owen Nolan, former Belfast Giants, they're not as into the NHL over there. Anyways,
by the way, one last thing, that is a city to visit. If you get a chance, go to Belfast.
Yeah.
It's amazing for its history and for what it is now. They've got an incredible museum for the Titanic, the building of the Titanic, because that's where it's built. And it's built right on the site where it was built. And you can go to the areas where the troubles were for many years, and you'd be shocked at, how it's still going on. They're just not shooting each other as much. And B, what a small area it is. So anyways, Belfast, put it on your list.
Have you seen Banshees of Inisherin?
Yes, I have.
Oh, what a movie. Anyways, apropos of almost nothing. Like, I have no follow-up, but it makes me want to visit Ireland because it looks so beautiful. It does.
Well, that's how I felt when you guys weren't calling for a few days. So why don't you want to talk to me? And I just don't, like you anymore.
No, that's not true. Stop it. You knew that was never true. Anyways, so do you want to talk hockey? Yeah, the first,
if you
missed the first five games, you missed where there was some intrigue a little bit, especially in the first four. But you look at the totality of it and the Panthers having a lead on the Oilers for 255 minutes of the series, which is a finals record, and the Oilers wins all coming incredible comeback fashion and in overtime. Boy, pretty dominating for a Panthers team that just won the year previous. Boy, since the lockout, and I don't know, maybe you care, maybe you don't. Maybe this is just a sports talk radio trope talking about dynasties and whether the Panthers are a true one. Three straight finals and two consecutive cup wins. Pretty darn good, I'd say.
Yeah, I would. I mean, I put them definitely right there with the LA Kings teams that won a couple. I'm not sure I'd put them right there with Chicago because Chicago had a bit more firepower. But on the other hand, you know, Sergei Bobrovsky having a whole Hall of Fame goaltender tends to put you a bit better. I think what's amazing is in their defense, in their Stanley Cup defense, the Panthers were more dominant than they were the first time around. They beat the Oilers better than they did last year, even though you know, there was that 3-0 and then the Oilers came back and, you know, they shut down Connor McDavid just as well. And the, let's face it, the additions that Bill Zito made, I mean, my God, Seth Jones and Brad Marchand, you know, the Oilers didn't add anybody like that. Neither did most teams that they had to take them on. And, you know, I just think that's a heck of a hockey team in, and playing under the, and we talked about this before, like in a time where the league is watered down, the officiating is really substandard. The league doesn't enforce anything. The Panthers push the envelope better than any team. And I think that's where Paul Maurice really, you know, developed. And I've seen him develop as a coach from when he first came in the league with Carolina all the way through Winnipeg and down to Florida. No more Mr. Nice Guy. You know, he gets his teams to play mean. That's a mean hockey team. And he understands the league's not going to do anything about it. So that's how, that's part and parcel of how the Panthers win, plus the Hall of Fame goalie, plus, you know, Sam Reinhart, I think everyone would now agree is, I mean, you know, he signed a huge contract and paid back every penny of it. Alexander Barkov, I mean, they've got some tremendous players, and we'll see what they can keep together now. You know, last year they lost, you know, Brandon Montour and a couple of guys, but now, you know, they're facing some tough questions with Sam Bennett and Aaron Ekblad and Brad Marchand, and let's see what they do next. But right now, they're setting the tone for the league. They're setting the standard, and how are teams going to, other teams going to adjust to it?
Yeah, when I look at them, I think, I mean, you know, whether the identity has to be this or not, I think when you look at teams that don't win a championship but are able to kind of string together year after year of success, they have an identity one way or another, and that clearly is what the Panthers have kind of done here. I agree with you. I think it'll be fascinating to see how it plays out in terms of, you know, keeping the roster together. Sam Bennett did do the, like, I'm not leaving. Now, he announced this at a nightclub, so I don't know that that's, like, a verbally binding contract that he signed, but I expect he'll be back, whereas it seems like Ekblad, from some reports of, and this is from like literally hours ago, because these guys won't go to bed, and why should they? They've just won the cup. That he gave like a pretty tear-filled, emotional, more of a goodbye than a let's do it again type of thing. So yeah, it'll be fascinating to see there. You know, on the flip side of it, you look at the Oilers, and you know, I'm sure you saw some of the stuff from McDavid yesterday of, you know, it was a, it wasn't I'm going, but it certainly wasn't, yeah, let me get a pen and put it to paper right this very second. What do you think, you know, is next for the Oilers in terms of, you get so close to this time, or you know, you feel like you're so close, but again, in hearing them talk, it seems like they feel they're farther away than they were a year ago.
Well, they know for sure they can't win with that goaltending.
Yeah.
Right. You just like you. What they gave up, at least 4 goals in every game, unless I'm mistaken. I mean, you can't win with goaltending like that, which is fine to say. But where's the solution? That's the problem. And they face, you know, the same issues that other teams do. You know, they pay a lot of money to a few guys, and none of them are goalies. And then when it comes down to it, you know, Florida did the opposite. They paid a lot of money to Sergei Bobrovsky, and now they're reaping the benefits. Didn't happen right away. You know, he fell to number two on their depth chart, but all, in the end, it has paid off. So I think that's how, if you're the Edmonton Oilers, how do you patch that goaltending situation and not take away from the rest of your team? That's a giant question. You know, it's not just a little question. They don't have championship-level goaltending. And you know, there's other areas. I think their defense was exposed a little bit, but that's what Florida does, man. They expose stuff on you. That's what they do. I mean, they're just so rock solid in so many areas. So, I mean, you know, you've got McDavid, you've got Draisaitl, you've got good players, you know, you got Darnell Nurse, but they pay him too much money. But how do you get out from underneath that? Ekholm, I think, was a huge disappointment to them in the final. You know, he's such an important guy for them last year. You know, I was surprised the Oilers made it back to the final. I really was, because it's such a difficult thing to do, and not necessarily what happens if you get to the final. But you know, they don't have a lot of young players coming. They've been set up to win now. So their summer's all about finding a goalie, and I don't know who that goalie is. Maybe you guys do.
No, I don't. And maybe that's what Connor McDavid's going to wait on until he's not going to sign his extension until he sees the goalie that they
But let's be, you know, the whole Connor McDavid thing, you know, first of all, I expect he'll stay in Edmonton, you know, but he's a Toronto guy, and Toronto guys want to play in Toronto if they get the chance. I mean, he grew up a Maple Leaf fan. He'd love to play with the Leafs under the right circumstances. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean he's going to be a Leaf, because there's a whole pile of other stuff that starts to unfold. And, you know, he's not going to go out that press conference and say, I grew up cheering for the Leafs. I'd love to play for the Leafs one day. He can't say that. He's not being honest.
You think he's thinking that, though?
Sure he is.
Yeah.
Sure he is. But, like, he's like John Tavares. He's like a million guys. But that doesn't mean that's what they'll happen. Like, what he would say is, I'd love to play for the Leafs, but, geez, I'd like them to be a good team. And they've got no first-round picks, and they're letting Mitch Marner go. Mm-hmm. So I don't think now's the right time. So, no, you know, as much as I'd love to be a Leaf under the right it has to be under the right circumstances. Mm-hmm. You know, so, you know, could you fit him and Austin Matthews under one, you know, maybe. I, you know, there are just so many variables. And I heard you touch base on the tax-free state thing, which is getting a lot of play. Everybody wants to talk about it now. Nobody was talking about it when those teams were winning. Now they're talking about it like it's all that matters. It's not true. I mean, you know, players want to play in Los Angeles. That's a heavily taxed state. They want to play in New York. They want to play lots of places for a whole pile of different reasons. They don't want to play in Ottawa. They don't want to play in Winnipeg. Few of them want to play in Edmonton, you know, places, you know. So, you know, that'll be a challenge for those teams. But it's not like everybody's flooding to these teams. You know, under a salary cap system, you've got to find a team that can fit your salary, that gives you all the other things that you want as well. So I think that's being really, really overblown. You know, it's kind of the thing everybody wants to talk about, which I guess is fine. But I don't think that is now the decisive element in who wins the championship.
I don't look at it as the decisive element at all. I think it is an obvious advantage that those locales have. And when the league just tries to poo-poo any discussion of it, I think it's totally fair for people to get their back up a little bit. But I also don't think most people who point out the state tax advantage go, well, I mean, through all of perpetuity, the Florida teams have been great. Like, I think it's like anything in life. Yes, that is something that helps them. It's just that I do in my heart of heart believe that if the Canadian teams had this massive advantage and there was a, you know, a flux of talent to the seven markets up here, that the league wouldn't be looking at it with the same, oh, well, there's nothing we could do. I think they'd probably be looking at it in a different manner. I think that's where I get my frustration.
Well, I mean, I think if you look at the Canadian teams, they're all, you know, or most of them are very successful now financially. You know, the Toronto Maple Leafs may not have, you know, a provincial tax advantage. But, you know, they've got lots of other advantages with, like, they've got, you know, they're owned by a gigantic corporation that has all kinds of money they can plow into their minor league operation and all these other things. And you know what? Guys who are making $10 million a year, like, they tend to probably know accountants who can help them deal with, you know, their tax situation
like
in
John
a variety
Tavares?
Of ways. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't think John Tavares is sitting there worrying about how much he pays in taxes, other than the fact that everybody on the planet thinks they pay too much in taxes. So, you know, but that will appeal to some guys, no question about it. It'll appeal to some guys, and other guys, there are other factors: weather, tradition, where their families are, where their families are from, you know, the arena. Like, there's just so many variables, and to try to boil it all down to, well, it's where you pay the least taxes, I think that's a mistake.
One of the advantages the Leafs have is the notoriety that you gain when you play for the Toronto Maple Leafs, and it equating to at least some off-ice earnings. And, you know, talking to Jeremy Roenick at the Joe Carter Classic the other day, he was talking about how that pales in comparison to your playing salary, but it helps offset it as well. And, like, and you think about your post-playing career, not that Brad Marchand needs more name recognition, but you can certainly gain it by playing in Toronto. It does feel like Sam Bennett would be an easier fit. Obviously, the position he plays, the age difference there, but seems like the Panthers are prioritizing, and probably rightly, bringing him back. And maybe they fit Marchand in there as well, but it does feel like he's going to just take the biggest offer that's out there. If you were the Leafs, would you go above and beyond for Brad Marchand, even at 37?
No, I don't think you go above and beyond. I think if there was mutual interest, I think you could make a solid offer. I don't think you'd be going, super long term, which he might get from somebody, because of all he's done in his career. I think the Leafs, I'm not sure what they're doing. They're letting good players go. They're kind of more in a scapegoating mode as opposed to a building mode. And we're going to see probably starting July 1st, okay, what is the plan here? What kind of, are we going to get more checkers and more defensive defensemen, which is Brad Treliving's specialty, or are they going to find a way to, replace the offense that they've lost with Mitch Marner, or are they going to try to get big and mean or whatever? I don't think we really know right now exactly what the Leafs are going to do. And so, look, it's always so easy to look at the guys on the Stanley Cup winning team and say, they would make us better. Guys did that for years with the Montreal Canadiens. But Aaron Ekblad's a great example. If Aaron Ekblad is as good as he seems to look, then why aren't they paying him $10 million? Because they know their players. And they know that Aaron Ekblad, take him out of that situation in Florida where every forward interferes. And so you can go back and get the puck. And and he can just, his job is limited. That applies differently in other places. And so you have to be careful what you pay these guys. I think the Leafs are now extracting themselves out of a situation where they pay too much money to too few guys. Doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense to go into another situation where they're paying too much money to too few guys.
Yeah, maybe. Also, it makes it more palatable for the Panthers.
Yeah, maybe.
The thing is, here.
You wanted them to go out and get Brad Marchand.
I do. Well, I wanted them to go out and get Sam Bennett, no matter the cost. But it seems like that won't even be a possibility because I think he's going to sign before July 1st. But yeah, I think what they can also do, one of the advantages the Leafs have is they can do the thing they did with Chris Tanev. And that the Lightning maybe did with the Yanni Gourde deal is they give these super long contracts that they don't expect the players to be playing by the end of it. And nobody's called out a team yet for doing that. So maybe you do give like Brad Marchand the 4 or 5 year deal. You lower the cap hit, you give all his money up front, and then either he retires or you can trade the deal when he's no longer a useful player to one of those teams that is trying to get up to the cap floor and there's no actual cash on it. When I think, the cap is going up $20 million in the next 3 years. There's going to be haves and have-nots, and there are going to be teams just desperate to get to the cap floor. To me, that is the advantage the Leafs will eventually get, and it's starting to happen now. But, yeah, I would totally take advantage of that with a 37-year-old Brad Marchand who – And one of you mentioned the Ekblad thing. Like, what does he look like outside of Florida? I think we know what Brad Marchand, like, he's not a Panthers creation, right? Like, we can comfortably say that. Oh. I think I'd be perfectly fine, paying, especially if you get the cap hit down to like $6-7 million. I'd be perfectly fine with Brad Marchand at least a couple of years.
I mean, he ticks all the boxes. For sure, right? If you want, particularly if you want to change your team, which they seem to want to change their team, so he ticks all the boxes. It doesn't make sense that he'd come for a discount. So $6 or $7 million seems kind of wishful thinking.
Well, but if you get the total cash though, right? Like 5 year deal. I guess if there's 4 years out there, if you just extend the length of the deal and he's getting as much or more cash from the Leafs on a deal that is probably a little circumspect. I think that's where you could make it work.
I mean, I think the Sam Bennett thing is intriguing from the perspective of, I mean, Brad Treliving was the guy who gave up on him in Calgary. Right. And so now he's going to, after he goons the lead goalie and takes him out of the playoffs, now he's going to sign and give him a pile of money. I mean, that's rich from about six different, perspectives. And you know what? I think, with Bennett, I mean, he's a player everybody admires, and he was a deserving winner of the Conn Smythe Trophy. But you got with these free agent contracts, first of all, naming the team that was built on free agency, and second, you're going to end up paying a guy for what he did, not what he's doing. And, he's like a regular season, he's a 50-point guy, and everybody says, okay, but it doesn't matter. It's matter what you do in the playoffs. Well, he doesn't do that every playoffs. He doesn't know what he end up with, some crazy 15, 16 goals, some crazy number. He's not going to do that every year. And, you know, I think it's the number is really going to be interesting with Sam Bennett, because he can say, I'm not going anywhere, whatever, bracket, but they're going to have to pay me. So do you want to pay him more than Alexander Barkov?
Yeah.
Right? And you know, the market with the cap going up over the next 3 years, why would you take anything less than $12 or $13 million if you're Sam Bennett?
Ooh.
Why? Well, why would you?
Damian, I don't know the number climbs like quite to that point for him, but the point I think you're right about in this is that it boggles my mind that the NHL Players Association, and I understand that the players are these guys' bosses, but do not grab them by the scruff of their neck and tell them, what are you doing? You're nuking the leverage for all of your brethren out there. If Sam Bennett at 50 points, and I know Conn Smythe, but 50 points signs for 10 sheets a year, what does that do to every other 50-point forward? It doesn't make them worth 10, but it sure makes it easier to ask for, I don't know, four, five, whatever the number works at. And McDavid is the poster child for this if he doesn't ring the bell in the biggest way he can.
Someday, I mean, Connor McDavid should be making $25 million a year, and Darnell Nurse should be making two. But, that, you know, the NHL underpays its top players and overpays the middle class, like, ridiculously. Uh-huh. You know, you look at the contracts that you're going to see signed by the Yanni Gourdes and the Matt Duchesnes and the guys like that, they're getting way too much money. And, you know, the top guys should be getting a lot more, but that's not the way the NHL is set up. So I'm really interested to see how Sam Bennett does. He's earned it, right? Yes. Whatever he's done, he's gone out and he has earned it. And particularly for a guy who was, I won't say he was run out of Calgary, but he was a huge disappointment in Calgary. Never the player they thought they were going to get, and was transformed in a different situation. Maybe his load was just lightened by paying fewer taxes. You know, I don't know, whatever it was. You know, all you can do is say congratulations to the guy. I don't like the way he plays. I think he's a dirty hockey player. But holy smokes, did he do everything for that team in the playoffs. He did everything and deserves whatever he gets.
Damian, you can't put a price. Actually, you can, and maybe it's close to $10 million a year on knocking the opposing team's goalie out of a postseason series.
Yeah.
He almost did it again.
He tried to do it again later in the playoffs, right?
But he got a two-minute minor for goalie interference when he sat on Stuart Skinner, and it almost forced him out of the series.
I know. Remember, he tried to do it to Freddie Anderson. He tried to do the elbow to the head, excuse me, oh, that's a mistake. I didn't mean to do that. Sorry, you have a concussion, you know, play. And and that's Florida, right? They get away with stuff, and they know it, and they play that way, and more power to them,
I guess. But yeah,
what does that mean? Like, that's why you have to. Yeah, maybe. What do you mean?
No. I mean, like, I don't. They need to send them more power. They've got enough power. Not more power to them. Like, yeah, they've got enough power. Three.
So you want the Leafs to get Bennett and Marchand?
Why not? Why not? I know you think that they need to stand pat because they're the team that pushed them to seven games when nobody else would.
Yeah, because that's what I said. When did I say that?
and they are losing an $11 million 100-point player in Mitch Marner. But yeah,
an $11 million player in John Tavares. So they got.
He's coming back though. Don't you think he's coming back? I think John Tavares is coming back. I think
Here's what I say, and this is why I keep saying, I'm not sure what they're trying to do in Toronto right now. So far, from what I've seen, is they seem like they want to please the fans. They want to throw meat to the mob. So John Tavares is popular, so if that's what they're focusing on, then yeah. If you're looking on, why does Mitch Marner gets flagged for his playoff performance and John Tavares doesn't?
He scored the overtime winner in game six in 2023.
It's kind of
yeah,
amazing.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, like John Tavares did not have a good playoff. He was slow, and so why is it good to bring him back? Because he'll play for less, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I guess that's what they'll do with him. But still, that should free up money to do lots of stuff. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what the direction of this hockey team is going to be. And if Brad Treliving, after a career of mediocrity, is going to be able to raise his game and do what Bill Zito's doing in Florida. And that's what the standard is going to have to be for the Leafs, because they clearly think that Treliving's the guy.
Yeah.
That he's the genius that can take this thing to the next level. Now we're going to find out.
Yeah, author of such incredible deals like Sam Bennett to the Florida Panthers for Emil Heinemann and a second-round pick, which ended up...
Got to be patient for that second-round pick. Yeah, I know.
Good stuff.
The funny thing was, at the time, nobody said, oh, that's a steal for Florida. You know,
no.
It's like when Sam Reinhart went to Florida from Florida. You know, nobody thought, oh, Buffalo, why would they give him away? And that's a credit to Florida. They turn guys into really good players.
Mm-hmm. Damien, we missed you tremendously. Thank you for returning to the continent.
Long drive, champ. It's I really look forward to seeing that bomb off the tee sometime in the relatively near future.
Hopefully we can make that happen. Damien, thanks as always, buddy. Appreciate it.
Bye. You guys have a good day.
You too. Damien Cox, our Leafs historian. Always a pleasure. I got to do that European golf vacation. Are you going to wait until your kid's old enough to play 18 holes of golf before you do it, Brent?
Yeah, I don't know that I'd wait. The way all of my trips in life work is somebody tells me they're doing it, and I'm like, oh, you've planned it? Sounds fun. I'll self-invite. I don't know. Like, I always feel that way about Cabot. It's like, I'll go one day when a friend of mine is like, hey, let's go to Cabot. So, that's kind of how I feel about all that stuff. The thing I wanted to pick up from Damo, and I know I got to go, but just... He joked about a suspension off the top. I feel like that'd be great for his brand. It's like, we have suspended Damien Cox for 3 weeks or whatever. And just to be clear, we haven't. He's absolutely coming back. But I think it'd be good. Like, all of us could use a little bad boy in the brand. So I don't know. Maybe we revisit that at a later date. Next time he's on vacation, we could do him that solid.
Good call. Just forget that we had this conversation when that happens. It's organic,
obviously.
Okay. All right. When we come back, we will play the Connor McDavid comments from yesterday and parse them. That and more next as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Annis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Connor, respecting that you mentioned how much you get some things to think about, obviously, but what are those things? What do you want to kind of drill down on as you make a decision here on a contract extension and the thought of possibly staying here for a while?
Winning would be at the top of the list, and then, winning would be, it's the most important thing. If I feel that there's a good window to win here over and over again, then signing is... no problem. It's only been a couple of days. I'm sure we'll get into it over the course of the next couple of weeks. I'm not in a rush to make any decision. So I don't think that there needs to be any timeline. You know, I know people are going to look at that July 1 day and be looking to see if there's anything done. But for me, there's no, I'm just not in a rush that way. So.
Chill out. Everything's fine. Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning. That was Connor McDavid yesterday at the season-ending media availability in Edmonton. And nobody's freaking out in Edmonton yet. And Mark Spector's making sure of that. I don't know if you read his latest on sportsnet.ca. There's more than a little teaspoon of copium there. It's, already tamping down the conversations like the one we're about to have about those comments. But it is true, Brent, that Connor McDavid did not come out and say definitively, I know there's stuff to work out, but I'm here. Like, we're so close. We're going to give it another go here, and I'm going to spend my entire prime in this city, and we're going to bring a cup to Edmonton. He didn't say that yesterday.
No, there's a lot of room between what he said in there. I suppose for the people of Edmonton, he didn't go, "I am leaving. The show stops right here." Like, he didn't do that. So good job, I guess. No one had that on the bingo card. I think the reason why this is so shocking is because of the script we had all written in our own head for this availability. I feel like, to a man, we all kind of expected, well, you know, that did not go the way we wanted. The mission is a cup here in Edmonton. There was enough wiggle room being given there that it was chop, chop, get to business, my former agent, and build me a better hockey team, maybe one with a capable goalie. So, yeah, that was honestly just like first impressions are everything. And, man, I did not expect anything close to that. It wasn't him saying he's leaving, but it certainly wasn't him saying he will definitively be staying either.
Yeah, if he cared about not making Oilers fans nervous, then he would have said something different. He obviously knew that anything short of "I'm going to be in Edmonton beyond next season, we're going to take it and run with it," especially if you're in a market like Toronto. I know, winning, okay? And the joke, of course, will be like, winning? The Leafs? Like, he's going to leave Edmonton and go to Toronto because he's interested in the business of winning. Brent, could you make the case that it would be easier to win in Toronto than it will be in Edmonton beyond next season when his contract, as currently written, expires?
Yeah, I think you can easily make the case. The Leafs are going in their transition period right now, the year before McDavid would be eligible. The Oilers are in the midst of it, and it will continue into next year because he's at the massive part of it. I suppose if this was a world where it's McDavid and, hey, like, everybody apparently asked to play with Marner at the Four Nations, but it wasn't like they were stapled at the hip together the entirety of the tournament. I suppose you could argue that that'd be the guy he'd want to come play with. But no, I think you could easily make the argument. Yeah, I know, man. I know all the jokes. I make them too. But then what are we talking about for teams where he can go where he'd win? Like, Dallas is a first sure winner? No, they're
Florida.
Not. Florida, okay, so he's going to be Kevin Durant? Probably not. Tampa, that wouldn't be Kevin Durant. It'd feel pretty close, and I don't know that they have all the cap space in the world just sitting around. And guess what? If they got to move guys out, they're a worse team. So I understand at first blush going, "Oh, yeah, you want to win? Come to Toronto." Good one. I don't know. You go tell me the team that is still going to have a William Nylander and an Austin Matthews under contract if a John Tavares and Mitch Marner just walk away for nothing. What would the Oilers look like if Connor McDavid walked away for nothing? I don't think it'd be a team he'd be dying to join. So, yeah, I think you absolutely can make the case. It's not the first team you used to make the case, but I don't know that it's lower than like five or six on the pecking order of teams you could make that argument for regarding him.
Yeah, and you didn't mention the other thing, like the actual roster thing that right now makes them a little bit more curious is they have a goaltender, right? And they have right now it's a tandem of goaltenders, and who knows what that looks like if Anthony Stolarz is a Leaf beyond this season. But I think you feel pretty comfortable with Joseph Woll being your number one. And maybe not throughout the entirety of the seven-game series against the Panthers, but he's shown enough in the postseason that I think you can dream on him one day being the guy that, well, he's done it before, but like outplaying a goalie on the other side in a seven-game postseason series and being one of the main reasons why the Leafs win multiple rounds, if not a Stanley Cup. I mean, that's a little extreme maybe, but no, the Leafs already have that thing in place that the Oilers, the number one thing, it feels like the Oilers will be chasing this offseason is a goaltender. How they achieve that goal, I have no idea. And you wonder if Connor McDavid, when he talks about also being patient and like don't freak out about the July 1st of it all, if he's sitting back and watching the pursuit of a goaltender this offseason before he decides to put pen to paper. The other thing is too, like the length of deal. I mean, is that impacted by the offseason moves here by Edmonton? And could it be a shorter-term deal to continue to light a fire under this Oilers group? I think anytime you have Connor McDavid, you don't exactly need more motivation to try and win every year. Right. But, yeah, again, like it just you parse the words and you think about what could have come out of yesterday's media availability, and the most satisfying answer that Oilers fans could have gotten, and that was not even not it, but I think miles away from it.
Yeah, he's not an idiot, right? Like he might not want to play our game all the time, but you know, he talks to people. He understands how things are perceived, and he understood what this does. And I think that sometimes you have to use it. You're right that you shouldn't have to. If you're Connor McDavid, everyone should just understand it's go time now. The thing I'm coming to with this, with the Oilers, is there a more terrifying proposition in sports than the thing? Like, it is maybe harder to find a true number one center because nobody gives them up or anything along those lines. But the idea of you are going to stake the future of your organization's ability to keep Connor McDavid on finding a goalie, which it sounds like, yes, that's what I would do if I was McDavid. I can't think of a more terrifying thing to have to find when you have to find it. It's one thing to stumble upon a goalie and find one, but when you are under the gun and you have to, it's like I'm seeing reports of John Gibson. The Ducks are willing to retain on that. Guys, I don't think that's going to do it for Connor in terms of thinking, oh, don't worry, we're saved. John Gibson's here now. So that's the other part about this, is just from the Oilers' perspective, good luck. It's hard enough to find a goalie if you're just out browsing. If you're going out specifically shopping for a goalie, I don't know how all that's going to go for you.
They must have been devastated when Pete DeBoer was fired, because you know they could have hoped against hope that they keep Pete DeBoer, and Jake Oettinger's like, get me the hell out of here. I'm not doing this again with this guy.
Maybe they got to hire DeBoer, and the sales pitch is like, don't worry, McDavid, he hates the goalies just as much as you do. Maybe that's the way you got to go about it. You're right. Like, that would have been obviously, getting Oettinger out of there would have been spectacular, but ain't going to happen. Stars made their choice. So you have fun shopping in the, you know, John Gibson or, like, I mean, you've made the case for it, the Anthony Stolarz waters. But, I mean, honestly, you're Connor McDavid, that's making you sign the 8-year deal, like, don't worry, 32-year-old Anthony Stolarz. And it's like, that would give me confidence for the next couple of seasons. But if the plan is about a long-term plan here, Anthony Stolarz ain't exactly that either. Joe Wall, very different story.
Yeah. So where did we land on this? That, like, is there a thing that if he's waiting to see what they have in store this offseason, the Oilers, and if the primary thing he's waiting on is in goal, what are the odds that he gets what he likes? And then what does that result in as far as extension wise?
They're going to make a trade for a goaltender that will be underwhelming, but enough of an upgrade. And I wouldn't be shocked if that is what leads Connor McDavid to do the Austin Matthews thing of the 4-year deal or 5-year deal or something like that, and try to, you know, hit that bell one more time, even though he wouldn't look at it that way. That'd be 100% what he'd be doing. So, yeah, I think honestly, because I still think, much like with the Leafs, the hammer they have to use against John Tavares is you really want to be a Leaf. I think that, and it's wild to use this sentence, of the hammer they have to use against McDavid, he doesn't want to show up to camp and answer these questions again. He does not. There's no way that he does. So I agree he's going to, like, toe the line and not rush to an extension. I think there is going to be a little internal pressure of, like, God, I do not want to deal with this thing all year long. So I bet the move they make is enough.
If that were true, if he really didn't want to answer the questions and he didn't want the speculation surrounding himself, even if he was lying, he could have just said, hey, no, I'm going to be an Oiler forever.
No, but he's going to go away now. But that's the difference, is it's like he's not like, when are you going to see Connor McDavid again? The BioSteel camp or whatever? Honestly, like, you're not going to see from him. You're not going to hear from him. I think it's very different when there are reporters there every day, and then once the season starts, it's a new group of reporters there every time you're on the road. So yeah, I think that to me is the difference there.
God, what an electric season that would be, though.
Thank you, Connor. Honestly, thank you. Good job. Did not think you had. I did not think you had it in you. So great job.
No, it's probably fine though. Probably fine, but
okay. Sure, spec.
Yeah. All right. When we come back, we'll talk to Shai Davidi as the Fan Morning Show continues. Ben Ennis, Brent Gunning, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.